ebook publishers and marketing services company Just Imagine It, Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, a new fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes and right here locally on KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, 89.5 FM. Art and entertainment news and views. Today's podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Downpour.com, the one stop for all your audio and digital book needs. Join the Downpour Audiobook Club and save up to 50% on digital downloads, exclusive member-only deals and promotions with no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. Only $12.99 per month. That's Downpour.com. On this episode, we walk the Hollywood beat with Kristen Burt. Cynthia White's book on acting adorns New York bookshelves and The Hard Way in our audiobook feature right after the news you want to know.
I'm Charlie Stanton.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Chrissy McIntyre.
I'm Jerry Renfro.
And I'm Maya Seligman. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world. This summer, J.K. Rowling has had a streak with the Harry Potter. She's continued. In June, she released a new story that imagined Harry Potter as a 34-year-old. Then she also did the voice of Dumbledore, a letter. And now she has released another new story about Celestina Warbeck, a minor character from the series, who was actually inspired by Welsh singer Shirley Bassey. Rowling released the story on the Harry Potter site, which is at pottermore.com. And then she also made it available on the Today Show. And she said that actually Warbeck was one of her favorite offstage characters in the whole Harry Potter series. She says, Celestina was simply begging to be scooped up and attached to a glamorous witch.
So she heard the name Celestina and thought, that needs to be a witch's name.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's cool. So her nickname is actually the Singing Sorceress. And according to Pottermore, she performs songs off her debut album. And I love the title. You stole my cauldron, but you can't have my heart, which she's probably not a country western, but that's what it sounds like to me. And so in the story, so she sings that daily at the Harry Potter theme park in Orlando, Florida.
Oh, nice.
And there are also other tunes that I got a kick out of the titles. A cauldron full of hot, strong love. And there's another one. You charmed the heart right out of me.
Oh, man.
Which takes on a whole new meaning when you're talking with wizards and witches.
Yeah, it's true. So I love how she's bringing those different elements together.
You know, I don't know how to feel about this because, like, I enjoyed the Harry Potter series. I loved the movies. I never read the books. My wife did. She really liked them. And it's like they wrapped up so neatly. 7 books. It took a long time. And I don't know, like, how to feel. Like, is it great that she's expanding on it with all these fringe characters, or is it tainting the memory of such a well-encompassed thing? I don't know. I'm really torn on this.
There are probably a couple sides on that. I would guess that some people are really excited to have more and see her doing these creative things in new ways. And other people are kind of like, hey, I wanted that.
Yeah,
they're attached
hate for it
to that.
Get
just like you're talking
you know,
about.
I would hate for it to get diluted,
you know what?
It sounds good.
I don't know. I would side with the more is better because obviously – there's going to be a new generation, and they're always going to want, you know, they're not going to want to read the books that their mom and dad read. You know, you got new characters. But then again, let's just take a look at the most successful books in history, man. They're all in the James Bond series, you know.
Yeah.
There's so many authors that when they pass away, people start writing for them in the same vein, the same series, because people like it.
Yeah.
You know, you get a good book, you know, which Harry Potter is.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's a good series.
Or a Sue Grafton series, you know, the Alphabet series. And when she passes away, someone's going to start writing, you know, another series because people like the familiarity. It's like, you know, you know the characters, you feel at home, you feel comfortable, you're reading it. It's not something that, you know, is going to be, you know, you know, Hemingway.
Well, yeah, it's, when you think about it, there are some soap operas that have been going on for decades. And it's like once it gets rolling and people get attached and people get hooked, then they want to be able to see the creativity of new characters.
And they've been doing that, like, you know, since, you know, radio days, you know, and stuff like that, you know. And then, I mean, even James Franco was on a soap opera.
Oh, yeah, I love that guy.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, you know, another thing I like about this story you were telling me about, Maya, is that I did not know that Pottermore or wherever they do this.
Yeah, Pottermore.com.
That this woman you're speaking of, she often appears on The Witching Hour, which is a wizard radio program. Mm-hmm. They have their own radio program for like that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Harry Potter World in Orlando is wildly successful. And I think
And it's magical.
It's magical? I don't know. I haven't been there, but I know it's successful financially. Mm-hmm. So,
oh, no, that was a play on words. Harry Potter, magical.
Yeah, I got it. I'm not an idiot. I picked up the reference.
I kind of said that for our listeners.
Oh, yeah. God, I always forget about the listeners.
But if you want to take it personally, That's cool too.
You're casting your spell.
Yeah. I agree with you, Charlie. I think it's great that J.K. Rowling is keeping the series going, you know, with these little stories. And, you know, she doesn't have to write like the Harry Potter series again. You know, she can just write a little short story. You know, just people love these characters. They love this world that she's created. And they want to be able to go back.
Yeah, and you know, I would have thought that Jerry Renfro, the guy I know, would have been more on this side of it because of, you know, one of your great time loves and passions, man, is, you know, your superheroes.
Yeah.
And they've been going on since day one. It's like, it's like, dude, you know, I am so fucking sick of Superman, DC 2,168, you know, I mean, you know. But there's an audience for it because people feel comfortable with it and they like it and they look forward to it. Even though they know the characters and they know, you know, pretty much what the storylines are going to be, they like, you know, getting the new installments of it.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is. I think it's because Harry Potter, I enjoyed it, but it wasn't something, like you said, you know, I love comic books. I'm a huge comic nerd, and I'll never badmouth anything that they do. If they want to come out with their millionth character, I'll be fine with that. And I think it's just because Harry Potter wasn't a thing I was into like that. So, but I can also appreciate that there have been series in the past that have gone, I think, too far, that have diluted it too much or done too much. And I'm not saying this is the case here. So far I've enjoyed, I read the letter. I liked the little story, you know, about Harry as an adult. So I just, you know, as a devil's advocate kind of thing, I wondered what other people thought.
You know what? It's like, like Westerns, like the Louis L'Amour Westerns, right? You know, I have no desire to read any of them. But there are people, and they've been doing it for like 100 years, reading these books. What do you think, Maya?
Well, what it reminds me of is reality shows, because really, even though it's different people who are on them, they're kind of fitting the same character. And so for some reality shows, people get hooked. They want to see it again and again. They're going to have the same reactions. They're going to go through the same dramas. They're going to be, you know, the kind of different stereotypes of what they do. Mm. And at a certain point, I think for some of them, it's like, okay, enough already. We've had our fill.
Yeah. Right. You know, that could be true. Speaking of reality shows, I know you're big on reality shows. What's your favorite current reality show?
Project Runway just started up again. There's a new one, Top Chef. I can't remember exactly what it's called, but basically the Top Chef winners, they come back and do this head-to-head kind of these battles.
Tournament of champions
kind
of thing.
Yeah, but just one-on-one. Yeah.
Well, I kind of, you know, I'm not into the reality series and stuff like that, but I have watched Dating Naked, and I thought it was pretty cool.
That was pretty funny. My wife's really into Naked and Afraid.
I've never heard of that.
You never heard of that?
Yeah, they put them on an island, and they get naked, and they go on dates. It's that way you remove the whole sexual tension thing, because it's like, oh, there you are. You're naked. I don't have to wonder.
I've done it before.
Yeah, you've done it before? Why does that not
just
surprise
kidding.
Me?
No, it's cool, man. They come on, you know, and I've seen like two or three of them, right? And they go out to a really nice paradise island, right? And there's a host, and then they have like three guys and three girls, and they all intermingle.
You know, right, they each date the other person.
They go windsurfing. They have whatever.
Like one people rolled cigars. I saw they actually rolled cigars out of tobacco.
Well, that actually really reminds me of a new series they are trying to do, Bachelor in Paradise.
So wait, how is that different than the regular Bachelor?
Because they bring in a new contestant every week. And they also, it's not that one is, there's only one bachelor or bachelorette. They are pairing up. And if they don't have someone who chooses them, then it works in a different way.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
But they keep their bikinis on.
Yeah. That sounds cool.
So you've seen it. Do you like it?
It's really bad, but it's so bad it's good. So bad it's good, you know. I wouldn't recommend it. But I secretly can't help watching it.
It's like a train wreck. You don't want to stand. Well, you can't look away.
I recommend that you watch Dating Naked.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
It's funny, too.
Yeah,
I think you should star in it, Charlie. I think.
You know what? I auditioned and they said that, no, dude.
This is too much for them. The full Charlie said, package was too much for them.
They said, look, dude, even with the wide angle, I don't know if we're going to get that. We're going to get that whole ass in there. You know what I mean?
Well, as great as reality shows are, you know, that's not my thing. I'm really into regular television. And as you all know, the Emmys happened very recently. I'm not exactly sure when this is going to air, so we'll say 1, 2, 3 weeks ago. you can pick. But one of the things I wanted to talk about, I don't know if you all saw, but, you know, Julia Louis-Dreyfus set a record, actually, for Emmy win. She won her third year in a row, won the Emmy for Outstanding Lead Actress in a Comedy Series for her role on Veep. And that actually is now a record, passing Lucille Ball, who, you know, was a genius comedic actress of her time. And but the thing that's got everybody talking was not so much the fact that she won the Emmy. Did anybody watch the Emmys?
No.
Yeah.
You did? Yeah. So you saw the so what she did was, she and Bryan Cranston, as she got up to go get her Emmy, Cranston stood up, grabbed her, and they made out on national television for 11 seconds.
Well, 11 seconds!
Tell our listeners who Bryan Cranston is.
So Bryan Cranston, you know, is the actor from Breaking Bad who also won an Emmy this year. And
here's the thing about Bryan Cranston is that they're both married, right? But Bryan Cranston plays the young stud on Breaking Bad, right?
Right.
And Julia Louis-Dreyfus is like in her mid-50s, and she won, and he came up to congratulate her, you know, and he just started making out with her like it was her date, you know.
Right, and he cleared it with her husband beforehand.
I'd hope so.
Everything was okay, but part of the reason it was funny is, before he was on Breaking Bad, before he was on Malcolm in the Middle, Bryan Cranston was a guest star on Seinfeld, and he played a dentist that was a love interest of Elaine's for like one episode, two episodes, or whatever, and, you know, had a very brief, you know, thing with Elaine, and so it was just kind of like coming full circle, and it was
so funny.
The Twitter sphere lit up, of course. It was very funny. Even like Vice President Joe Biden got in on it, and his tweet was, congrats, a fellow Veep with a great sense of humor and a good friend. You know, Joe Biden's the actual vice president. Mm-hmm. And on her show, she plays the female vice president of the U.S. So it was really, I thought it was a cute story. You know, I really like both of them. It was great to see, you know, it's good to see good writing and acting recognized. So just a little brief thing I thought I'd throw out there.
What do you think of Seth Meyers as the host?
I thought he was okay. I like Seth Meyers. He's not my favorite, but I thought he did a pretty good job, you know? I did. It wasn't one of those ones where I go, good God, what were they thinking? But I can't, there wasn't anything that really stood out to me. Like that's amazing. So.
What did you think, Charlie?
I thought he was amazing.
See, I love the range of viewpoints on this show.
I thought he did a really good job. This is his first time hosting a major award. And he does have you could tell he was a little bit nervous. He told a couple jokes and then, you know, he said like, you know, folks, like everyone here at the Emmys tonight, not everyone's going to be a winner. You know?
Yeah.
But the thing with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, you know, it was cool. I love the kiss thing. I love that the actual president, Vice President of the United States
tweeted
in, right? Yeah. And if you've ever seen the show Veep, it is hysterical. It's on HBO. And, and then she won all those awards when she was on Seinfeld. And she had that other series, Christine.
The
something.
New Adventures of Old Christine. Yeah, In fact, I think she's the first actress to win an Emmy for three different series.
Yeah.
Because awesome.
She got one for New Christine, one for Seinfeld, and now several for Veep.
Well, going from television to movies, there are some other interesting stories too, aren't there, Cyrus?
Yes, there are. One movie that we've talked about on this show before concerning the West Memphis 3. Of course, we all remember the teenagers in Arkansas
Arkansas.
Yeah, yep. who were turned out to be wrongly convicted of a brutal murder. Well, they've made the news again, and once again, it's not a good thing. Casey Anderson, he's a Portland country musician. He defrauded over 30 investors out of $586,000, saying that he would hold a benefit concert for the West Memphis Three. And this was actually pretty fashionable for a while. You know, a lot of people were with West Memphis Three. You know, Johnny Depp was a very vocal person. So it wasn't a surprise that somebody would be putting on a fundraising event for the three guys or for the three teenagers. And Anderson, the person that did this fraud, you know, he had Johnny Depp on his list, you know, along with Pearl Jam and Bruce Springsteen and R.E.M. and, you know, all these people. And he got people to invest. They were going to put together this concert. And, you know, how did he do that? Like, how was he able to defraud people out of that kind of money? He used emails. He impersonated relevant people with emails and got them to believe it. And, you know, it's just a sad thing. One more sad thing out of the West Memphis 3 story. You know, one more negative thing. You know, and Anderson, you know, he's caught. You know, he's facing a felony. And, you know, he's apologized to people. You know, he's admitted that he's got mental illness, you know. And he is a musician in his own right. You know, he's worked with some people like Andrew McCaig, you know, who was the guitarist for Presidents of the United States.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this is a sad thing.
That is sad.
Yeah, it is. You know, that they, I think it's a case of a guy that, you know, either, you know, it was mental illness or maybe, you know, drug fueled.
Yeah.
I mean, because the guy, you know, he does have a following. He, you know, he has, you know, he's played with the Counting Crows. You know, he's been in the music industry, so he had access to a lot of these people.
Right.
And Pearl Jam, did do concerts for
right for the yeah. West
that's West right West yeah Memphis Eddie Street. Vedder right. He was another big
yeah Eddie Vedder, as a matter of fact Eddie Vedder was the one who picked up Damian Eccles out of prison.
Oh wow.
Yeah. And you know, it's heart-wrenching, you know. And it's not so much the West Memphis Three, because they got a lot of bad press, but you right. know, but and you know, lose 17 years of your life, you know, over something you didn't do is a tragedy in itself. And then, you know, no one's even looking for the
who actually did it.
Mm-hmm. And there was two movies made about it. There was Paradise Lost, which right. started the whole thing, which got Johnny Depp and Pearl Jam involved.
Right.
And then there was a recent major motion picture, Devil's Knot, with Colin Firth and Reese Witherspoon.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there was books, and we did one of the books called Devil's Knot, which based on a movie.
Right.
Yeah, but, you know, when people do stuff like that, it just reminds you that, you know, you're so vulnerable in this day and age, you know, the internet and stuff like that, because, you know, everything's out there.
Yeah.
So this guy puts this all together and it looks legitimate. People say, yeah, I want to help these guys, you know, and he sold all the tickets. And it's like, yeah, hey, there's no joke.
He had just enough authenticity being in the music industry, you know, that he could potentially have had the clout to put this together. And then through the, you know, being able to manipulate emails to make it look like they came from other people and knowing the terminology, knowing all that stuff, he had just enough knowledge to pull it off. And it's just one of those cases where it goes to show, you know, that people will take a tragedy and try to profit from it. And it's sad. You know, I mean, these guys, their lives were devastated. And, I mean, he's going to pay for it. I mean, 4 years he got convicted. He's got to pay all the money back. And, you know, he said he's sorry and everything. But that's just it's not a victimless thing.
Right.
Yeah, and a lot of it's, you know, human nature. Because every time there's a natural disaster, there's always people looking to take advantage of other people. Yep. And, you know, and that's too bad. But, you know, but the music industry in whole is, you know, a lot of good, upstanding people, and they do a lot of good things. And I think Maya's got a story on some surprising albums that are going to drop.
Well, at least theories on it.
Okay.
Yeah, because you never know. Beyonce, you know, last December, she did a surprise self-titled album that actually ended up being really successful. 2 million were sold in the United States.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty successful.
Yeah, right. And so, you know, sometimes artists do drop that surprise album, but they're not all successful. And Billboard looked to its charts to determine the top five acts. So who would be able to do that and be successful? And this was based on their own weekly performance on the Billboard 200 albums chart, as well as the Social 50, which is basically it measures the most active artists on social media. And they came up with five different artists who would potentially be able to do that. They were looking at the last 5 years and the top artists. And so they said Taylor Swift was one.
Makes sense.
Yeah, she, because she's been the most successful in the last 5 years, selling 22.8 million albums.
Wow.
Yeah. And I saw her latest video and I got such a kick out of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you Shake It Off? Yeah.
Yeah, Shake It Off. The truth is, I don't consider myself a Taylor Swift fan necessarily, but I saw the video and it was mesmerizing because it was just so fun. I mean, she did all these different outfits. I thought the video was really well done, yeah. Different contexts, and it's a catchy song.
One of the jokes they made about her is that she's shaken off her country roots.
You know, and she might be, you know, hey, I'm more than just a country music artist. You know, I can do other things.
Totally. It totally worked.
I liked it. I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
It showcased her talents. She's more than a one trick pony.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. So she could easily probably drop, you know, do a surprise album and it would be successful. Justin Bieber, of course, wouldn't you?
No right. Shock there.
Yeah.
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 You know what? He takes a lot of bad press, but I'll tell you what, man, you know what? I hear a lot of Justin Bieber because I have small daughters.
whether you like it or not, you're going to hear a lot of Justin Bieber.
You got to give credit where credit's due, man. You know, irregardless of what he does as a 17-year-old kid or 18-year-old kid, he might be 18 now, he's a good musician.
Yeah, well, and the other thing is that he knows how to plug into social media.
I was about to say, isn't he really active?
Yeah, like when he tweets, people listen.
Right.
And he's active in that. I mean, being a youngster, that's what he is used to. And I think that really helps bring in
the in crowd.
Another one is a little different than him, Eminem. Because basically whatever he releases, it turns to gold. Or platinum, even. I mean, he really is. He has a real following.
You know, Maya, you are so right, man. And, you know, and I am astounded, you know, because, you know, Eminem is 40 years old and he's still, it's like, you know, hey, whatever he touches.
The guy goes off to rehab, comes back, writes an album about it. The thing goes double platinum.
I know.
I mean, it's who amazing. Else could do that?
Yeah, he's done 8 albums and they've all sold at least 2 million.
Wow.
Yeah. And so... But he doesn't have such an active role in social media.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. Like you never hear like Eminem tweeted this today. I mean, like how often does he use social? I mean,
well, he has a lot of followers, like almost 19 million followers.
Holy crap!
But he has tweeted less than 400 times.
So, wow.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting.
And 399 of them were on Drunken Night.
Yeah. 300 of them are Where Can I Score?
Yeah, right. Well, so now fans, they know if they want to engage with him, they basically just need to go to see him on tour or buy an album. And maybe that's what helps.
There's something to be said for that, you know, that maybe by being less available, you know, it makes it more likely that people will buy the album or go see the show, you know, because they don't get that constant daily reaffirmation. Well, I think social media is a double-edged
sword. Here's something, you know, that I'll ask all of you your opinion on. You know, he's sold 8 albums, all over 2 million apiece, so platinum albums. And he's 40 years old. He's been around since, you know, the beginning, right? Before there was, you know, social media and all that stuff. You know, this is just my opinion, man, is that the reason the guy is still so successful is that, you know, he just still releases good music. He won't release anything for 2-3 years. If he doesn't have anything good, he won't do anything.
He keeps his standards at that level.
Yep.
Yeah. And something I want to clarify is that this list that they are doing, it was specifically about which albums would sell in their entirety.
Like who could do it?
Well, yeah, and also not just by, you know, a few, the songs, the individual songs that people get on iTunes or whatever, but the actual full albums that are being sold.
Okay.
I meant to say that, really, because it is a difference. This is like the fans who are so dedicated, they want the whole album, not just the songs.
Well, it's like we were talking about on an earlier show about grazing and the end of arena acts.
Yeah.
So these bands, I guess, like you're saying, would be, they could still fill an arena.
Yeah, that's true. Number four was Lady Gaga.
Again, not surprising. I mean, she's very all over the place.
She's very talented.
I love her.
I really like her too.
It's difficult for me to admit that, but I actually like Lady Gaga's music.
It's true. She's also a visual artist. Like her videos are just amazing.
Yep.
And number five was Adele. Because her 21 album, it was a top seller a couple years ago. And actually something that blew me away, 72% of the 11 million that she sold were sold as physical CDs.
That's a feat.
I think that's kind of unusual.
Taylor Swift was the same way, though, wasn't she? I think she sold a lot of physical CDs, too.
Yeah, she. One thing that helps is that she sells them like through a number of different outlets, like Walgreens and Starbucks and Papa John's Pizza.
Yeah, I see Taylor Swift stuff everywhere. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, that list, I could have picked four of those. Like, if you gave me 10 to pick, I think I could have gotten them, but I never would have guessed Adele. That really surprises me. She's a great artist, don't get me wrong, but like I would have never figured that she would be one of those ones that was, the good combination of active social media and record sales. I knew she did well, but that's really surprising.
Yeah, the thing about Adele is she's a real class act. Mm-hmm. I mean, she can play at like Carnegie Hall,
Right.
People go like you're going to an opera.
Right. She's not going to be up there grabbing her crotch and swearing.
Well,
and
then I'm not going.
I really like that she's so beautiful in the body that she has, and she doesn't try to fit into the norms of Hollywood being totally skinny, but she's just gorgeous in her own full body. And which is actually a normal body, but compared to Hollywood,
following up with Jerry, I wouldn't have picked Adele either. If you had asked me that, I would have picked Justin Bieber, Taylor Swift,
same thing.
Lady Gaga would have been a maybe, I would have picked Pink.
Oh, really? Well, who knows? Maybe she's six on the list. We only got the top five, so you never
who knows?
Know.
That could be
but
it.
But speaking of Hollywood, you were talking, Maya, you were just talking about Hollywood. Mm-hmm. There was a story out of Hollywood very recently about the Big Bang Theory, the TV show. Now, I like the show. It gets a lot of crap. It's one of those things that people either love it or hate it. My dad loves it. We talk about it all the time. I'm a nerd. It's nerd culture. But a lot of nerds don't like it because it's like, it's Hollywood. I mean, let's face fact. But it does well. It does very well.
Isn't it number one?
It's number one. It's been number one for a while. It's basically ABC's
CBS
workhorse. I'm sorry. Yeah, let's hang on. Let me back up. It is number one. It's basically CBS's workhorse. I mean, it's their anchor. So that being the case, they're going into their eighth season. It's about time for pay increases. The same thing happened with Friends. Mm-hmm. And the three big stars of the show, Jim Parsons, Johnny Galecki, and Kaley Cuoco, all decided to do like they did with Friends. They call it a favored nations agreement, where they agree to negotiate with solidarity. And it guarantees that they all have the same rate. There's not any backdoor deals going on. Everybody gets the same amount. It can sometimes restrict the amount that somebody can earn, but it also makes sure that nobody gets messed over. So they finally came to terms with CBS at $1 million an episode. So they have entered that Friends Seinfeld territory. Mm-hmm. But actually it could end up being even more than that. The term is for 3 years, 72 shows roughly. So that's $72 million. But it's estimated they'll probably earn upwards of $100 million over that period due to other things like signing bonuses. They all got a larger piece of the show as well. They had about a quarter, 0.25%, and now they're going to be up around 1 point each. They have pretty much cemented the Big Bang Theory as being their workhorse for the next couple of years. Now, the rest of the cast, and I was really surprised about this because I really view them as the whole group as an ensemble cast, but the guys who play was it Wolowitz and it's Simon Helberg and Kunal Nayar. They they are negotiating separately, and their rates, their numbers aren't nearly up theirs. Mm. I found that a little bit surprising, but they did. I think they agreed to terms already with Mayim Bialik and Melissa Rauch, who play, Bernadette and Amy Farrah Fowler. So, but it's pretty much locked in. They're going to start production soon, and the show will debut late September 22nd, I think.
Yeah, I'm such a big fan. Maybe you know the answer to this. I've heard this, and I don't know if it's myth, rumor, or whatever, but somebody was saying something that one of the female lead on the show is William Shatner's daughter.
Well, no, Kaley Cuoco plays William Shatner's daughter on the Priceline commercials.
Oh, okay.
So William Shatner, and that's an interesting story too, kind of unrelated or not, but it shows about how these deals work in Hollywood. William Shatner, is the Priceline spokesman. He agreed to that deal 8-9 years ago or so for a very tiny salary, but a percentage of company stock. And that deal has netted him over $600 million over the life of the agreement.
Yeah.
And
cow.
A couple of years ago, it's one of those running skits.
No wonder he keeps living.
Yeah, no kidding. You got that kind of money, you find a way to extend your life no matter what. So a couple of years ago, they killed off his character, but then they brought him back, and now he has a daughter, and it's played by Kaley Cuoco from Big Bang Theory. So yeah, that's where that came from. So yeah, they're going to start off their eighth season. I'm happy for it. I enjoy it. It's doing very well in syndication, and that is where a lot of their money's going to come from too. So yeah, the three main characters. Jim Parsons has won the Emmy a couple of times, I think twice now, for his role as Sheldon Cooper. So.
Yeah, and isn't one of the guys from The Big Bang Theory, he was on a Roseanne show.
Yeah, Johnny Galecki actually played Darlene's boyfriend on the last couple seasons of Roseanne. And surprisingly enough, personally, as much as I like Sheldon Cooper, the portrayal by Jim Parsons, I really think Johnny Galecki holds that whole thing together. He's kind of the straight man, he's the – with the Abbott or the two his Costello kind of a situation, where if it wasn't for Johnny Galecki setting it up, the character would be more creepy than he is funny. So my dad and I were talking about that the other day, and that was actually his assessment of it that I was giving you. But it was like, without Galecki, he's just a weirdo.
But we're just going to have to take your word for it, because I'm sure I'm in minority here. I have never watched the show.
Never?
Neither
have I. I have tried to watch it, and I'm like, I don't know what everybody gets, because everybody's taste is different, right?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, this is not, it's...
It's a show designed for people like me. It really is. So I like it. I'm happy. I'm glad there's going to be more. I enjoy watching it in syndication. You can take it or leave it.
Right. And it's just like, with the, other shows, the Friends or yep. Seinfeld, stuff like that. Some people loved it. Some people were like, yeah, I could do
without
it.
I don't get it.
I'm happy, to watch,
Yeah, another show like that, I guess, would be maybe Parks and Recreation.
I was thinking about that, too.
Yeah. So, and if you like Parks and Rec, then you know all about Chris Pratt.
Love him.
Yeah. There's a funny story lately. He was talking about how in high school he was sleeping in a van in Hawaii. He was homeless, basically. He had a friend called him up and was like, hey, dude, you got to come out here and camp on the beach with me, and we can live the dream. And that's what he did. He went out there and he posted some pictures on Facebook. The van looked like the Scooby-Doo. It had a Scooby-Doo.
The mystery
and Shaggy.
Machine?
Yeah, the mystery machine. He had Scooby-Doo and Shaggy on it. It's hilarious. And, and then he said, this is the van I lived in. And in his hand, in the picture, he's got a movie script, which was his ticket out of Hollywood or out of Maui. That was his ticket out of Maui. And that's another interesting story, too. I mean, his whole career started as a waiter at Bubba Gump Shrimp Company in Maui while he's homeless living in this van.
I love it, man.
It's crazy.
It's crazy,
you couldn't
right?
write this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, truth is stranger than fiction.
Yeah.
So the person he was waiting on, Ray Don Chong.
Tommy Chong's daughter.
Tommy Chong's daughter gave him the screenplay and a part in Cursed Part 3. And here he is now. He's Parks and Rec. We all know him. And also, he is a Star-Lord in Guardians of the Galaxy, which is out of this world, and you know, one of the biggest blockbuster movies, you know, of all time, even.
Yeah, that is, you could not write that story. That was too cool. Yeah.
So I guess the moral story is move to Hawaii and on the beach.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
And good. I guess you could say he literally was living in a van down by the river, or by the ocean. I guess.
Yeah,
but it just doesn't sound as
down
good.
Down by a body of water.
That's amazing. You know, yeah. I was amazed to see his transformation from Andy on Parks and Rec to Peter Quill in Guardians of the Galaxy. That was, when I first heard he was cast in Guardians of the Galaxy, I thought, what? I think that was literally what I said.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. I do know what time it is. It's time to get the answers, everyone. And when I need to know, I go to Jerry Renfro. He knows. So listen up, higher education is coming our way. Now I love it. And God bless America.
Where do you go when you need to know? Go to Jerry Renfro, he knows. Where do you go when you need to know? Go to Jerry Renfro, he knows.
That's right, I'm Jerry Renfro and I'm in the know. Just Google it. That statement uttered 15 years ago would have made you sound like a crazy person to all but the few most technologically savvy people. But now, 10 years after their IPO, the company whose name has become synonymous with research on the internet has given us so much more than just that. Not that being able to Google things is any small feat, far from it, but I thought we should take a moment to look at many of the other things that Google has brought us since their inception and public unveiling. Google has become singularly focused on not only improving the here and now, but looking way into the future, they are working to improve the here and now for people that are in the there and then. Google Chrome has over 750 million users. The default web browser for many, Google Chrome is so much more than just that. A platform for everything from searching the web and sharing data to Hangouts and extensions that make your internet better. With everything from calendars to documents, Google Chrome does it all. Google Android, the smartphone/tablet/mobile device platform, is truly a work of art. Allowing for a veritable multitude of programs, Android is easy to use and open to all comers. The driving engine of most non-iOS smartphones, Android is truly the key to real wearable technology in the future. And where would we be without Google Maps and Google Street View? Probably in a neighborhood we shouldn't be in without the ability to see what the house we are searching for looks like. These features have made getting there and wishing we were there better than they have ever been. Just plug in an address and you can get step-by-step instructions to arrive safely or call up a real view of what it looks like so you won't have to imagine how cool it is in Paris without the visual clues. Next, let's look at the future. Google Glass. Sure, it hasn't reached the mainstream yet, but Google Glass is probably the future of smartphone technology. Allowing users to be hands-free when searching the internet, recording video, and a host of other tasks, the small screen has never been so big. Even bigger than wearable smart tech, though, is Google Ring. The idea is for Google to build huge rings of balloons outfitted with Wi-Fi tech that will bring internet access to 2/3 of the world's population easily and reliably. It may not cure malaria, but it will sure make it easier to look up ways to lessen the symptoms using home remedies when hundreds of miles from the nearest medical facility. Thank you, Google. I'm Jerry Renfro, and now you know.
And that's your art and entertainment news. Keep listening for Downpour's special feature.
Dressed up with love, I'll cross the seven seas to you. Will it be enough?
Many A-list actors know Kristen Burt from the red carpet during the Oscars. We caught up with her after the Teen Choice Awards in this interview with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Love that guy.
Hey, welcome everybody to another exciting interview on Get Behind Me Now, Stay There. Today we are really privileged to have on with us Kristen Burt. And she is a IAWTV award-winning host, new media producer, and pop culture writer. I mean, that's quite a title that you've got there going.
A lot of things happening in one sentence, right?
Yeah. And besides that, she'll wash your car on Saturdays, every Saturday. Bring it on down.
I'm full service.
Yeah. So tell me about, you know, what's going on, and for our listening audience, you know, what you've been doing. You seem to be all over the place. You, you know, working with, So You Think You Can Dance. I saw you on the Teen Choice Awards. You're all over.
I am. It's actually been a very busy week in Hollywood. The Teen Choice Awards on Sunday kind of kicked off the week. And I do the after show for both So You Think You Can Dance and Dancing with the Stars on AfterBuzz TV, which is owned by Maria Menounos, who's on the E! Network. So not only are we sort of wrapping up, we've got three more weeks left of So You Think You Can Dance, but Dancing with the Stars announced their pros for the new season. So,
wow. Well, you've got to meet a lot of A-listers and stuff like that. So, you know, I know our audience is chomping at the bit as well as I am. You know, tell us about some of the people you've met who've been more, you know, memorable in your mind. It doesn't mean because you like them better, or did they just, you, when you met them, you were just like, wow, you're not what I expected, and I'm really pleasantly surprised.
I think what's always fun to see is when you are at the Oscars, who's laid back and who's a little bit more formal and things like that. One of my favorite interviews ever has always been Meryl Streep, because here she is. She's been nominated 18 times. She's won 3 times. She's an incredible actress. But when she comes to the Oscars, she's just like, kick back, relax. Doesn't matter whether she's going to win or not. She's already got 3 on her shelf. But she's just a really fun interview, and you realize this is sort of the girl that I'd like to have a drink with after work and kind of hang out with. And you know that by the end of the night, she's the one dancing on the table having the most fun as anyone in the room. And I love that. I love to see that in someone that is so incredible on screen, that can take any sort of dramatic role or comedic role and make it into something really rich.
When you're describing her, it sounds to me that you're like a description of an older Jennifer Lawrence, because she seems to have the same energy.
You know, that's actually a great comparison. Also, someone that I think is going to have a career, Jennifer Lawrence, doesn't take herself too seriously, takes her work seriously, but is the one that you probably want to go to the party with.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you do the red carpets for the Oscars, and, you know, how long have you been doing that?
I've done 4 Oscars, so from 2011 through this last year, 2014, and it's a blast. It's something that I will never, ever get used to. It's overwhelming, but it's so much fun. It's a very long day, though.
You know, my cousin won the an Oscar.
Oh, fantastic. What for?
He won for Best Director. He won twice for Finding Nemo and WALL-E.
Oh, very good. So you have a Pixar family member.
Yeah, he was Pixar employee number 4.
Number 4, that's kind of big.
Well, you know, the first one was Steve Jobs, then John Lasseter, and then there was, I want to say George Lucas, but it wasn't George Lucas, but somebody in that vein, and then there was Andrew. And the reason they got Andrew is because he wrote and directed the movies, and they wanted his movies. At the time, Pixar was a startup. They didn't have any money, just the money that Steve Jobs invested.
Mm-hmm.
And he made the best career choice of his career. They told him, look, we can pay you for the movies, you know, and a good amount of money, or we can give you a percentage of Pixar. And he took the percentage.
He's so smart.
Yeah, he's worth
a whole lot now.
Yeah, he did all the Toy Story films and the Monsters, Inc. and Finding Nemo. And he's working right now on the new one, Finding Dory.
Of course, this is a sequel, which is going to be fantastic.
Yeah, he's done very well for himself, and we're real proud of him. But, you know, the Oscars is great. But, you know, besides doing the Oscars, you've done a lot of things. I have 2 small daughters, and they love the Teen Choice Awards, and I made the joke to them that they thought was incredibly lame. But I said, I think that everyone is concerned that the Teen Choice Awards might be fixed because I won for the Teenage Heartthrob.
They're like, Dad.
And they go, you're so lame.
Why? Yeah, the Teen Choice Awards were interesting this year because they were supposed to be held at the UCLA campus at Poly Pavilion. But unfortunately, there was a massive water main break about 2 weeks before. It was kind of national news. And the Teen Choice Awards had to move. They moved to the Shrine Auditorium where the Oscars used to be years ago. And it's just an older facility, so the red carpet was very, or it was a blue carpet, really, but it was very, very chaotic. It was scrunched. It was a hot day. And at one point, the fire marshal actually closed down the carpet and was just telling people, like, move on in, just go inside, go to your seat. So all these celebrities that you're wanting to interview are, like, rushing past you, and you're thinking, oh, no. But it picked up about 20 minutes there once they got the carpet under control and everything. But it's funny seeing, like, everyone from Disney Channel, ABC Family, Nickelodeon, all of the kids' favorites, all, like, racing into the theater to get their seats.
And who was the kids' favorite?
Some of the biggest stars this year, Zendaya from the Disney Channel. I think a lot of parents will recognize her from Shake It Up. She was also on Dancing with the Stars. Her stardom is just, I mean, it is going straight through the stratosphere. She's incredible. She's a very mature young lady at 17, really good head on her shoulders. Her parents are always with her, which is awesome, I think, in this industry. Also finding that Ansel Elgort is, like, huge this year. If you saw Fault in Our Stars, he's the one that plays August. So, you know, that was a really big film for the teens. And I'll tell you, when he's on the red carpet, people go absolutely nuts.
And, you know, was there, you know, anybody that I would recognize as an adult?
You're like, who do I know? Well, you know, a lot of the celebrities bring their kids. So, you know, if you know Candace Cameron, if you ever watched Full House growing up.
I have met her a few times. We published a book for her.
Yeah, she's great. She was just on Dancing with the Stars this past season. She brought her 16-year-old daughter to the show because it's kind of like the cool thing to do. So you do see a lot of that happening. For people that watch So You Think You Can Dance, Allison Hawker and Twitch are huge. They're probably some of the biggest stars in the dance world. They brought their 6-year-old daughter. So you saw a lot of parents coming down the carpet with their kids. You know that it's a hot ticket, and they get to be cool parents for a day by bringing them to the show.
Yeah, I bet so. So let's talk a little bit about Dancing with the Stars. So, you know, one, it's got to be a lot of fun, and I imagine it's a lot of work, too.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. I mean, you watch it on TV every week, and you see the celebrities learning to dance, and that's fun. But going to the studio and watching the show is probably the most exciting thing. It's one of those throwbacks, I think, to old-time variety shows. They ask that you dress up. The women come in dresses, and men have to wear suits. It's really elegant. And the green room, or the area where they keep the celebrities waiting, is on a second level. And it's just beautifully decorated. So it's really kind of a fun show if you ever get tickets to go and see it, because it really is a fun experience altogether.
Let me ask you the burning question here. Dancing with the Stars or So You Think You Can Dance? I've got two tickets here, and I'm going to give you one pair. So you tell me which one you want to go to.
No, very good. I'll go to Dancing with the Stars just because I think it's just a fun formal night out on the town, and I think it's just really special. It's not like going to see any other show. I mean, you can go in jeans and flip-flops just So You Think You Can Dance. I prefer So You Think You Can Dance over Dancing with the Stars just because I like seeing young, fresh talent competing. But if you're looking for a night out on the town, Dancing with the Stars it is.
All right, Dancing with the Stars it is. I will keep that in mind. Now, you know, I want to also ask you, you know, you were nominated for 2010 Stevie Award for the Best Web Series Host. Now, tell us about that. How do you go about doing that?
Well, I think the interesting thing is most of my work is on the internet. I do some TV work, too. But with the advent of video on the web and also with the explosion of social media, it's interesting because you're able to connect with your fans immediately and share links with them. They can watch the work. You don't have to say, oh, I'll be on, you know, next Thursday. Don't forget to DVR me or anything else like that. So I love that opportunity of just, like, immediately connecting with people and immediately sharing that work. So the web files, because we were such a unique show at the time, we did get a lot of nominations, which was kind of fun. And that's what I love being a host, because I am a version of myself every single time. I'm not an actress. I'm never a character or anything else. So I love to get in there and dig what those amazing stories are and find out why these people are sort of the pioneers of what's happening in web series and YouTube and everything else.
Now, do you have some addresses you want to give out to everybody where they can find your work?
Sure. They can find everything, all of my work and all the links to my social media pages at redcarpetcloset.tv. And for those of you that are on Twitter, it's at Kristen Burks, and Instagram and Facebook, it's the Kristen Burks.
Well, you know what, Kristen, you know, like I said, you know, it's been quite an honor for us, and I know all of our fans are going to find this very, very entertaining.
That sounds great.
Okay, beautiful. It was great talking with you, and we look forward to speaking with you again, and hopefully I got to see you at AfterBuzz Studios.
Yeah, that would be super fun. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
To learn more about Kristen Burt, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.
Jimmy's in the back with a pocket of heart. If you listen close, you can hear him cry. Oh, Lord, heaven knows we belong way down below. Sing it.
Oh, Lord, heaven knows.
Cynthia White's vast knowledge and experience informed the writing of her new book, Your Castable Types. She tells the president of Just Imagine Inc., Charlie Stanton, all about it in this interview.
Welcome, everybody, to another exciting interview on Get Behind Me, Now Stay There. Today, we are really, really pleased to have on Cynthia White. She is an actor, director, writer, producer, and an acting coach. And I think she has a couple other hats she wears on different occasions as well. Welcome, Cynthia.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm happy to be here with you.
Yeah, hey, we're so pleased to have you on. Now, you're in New York City. We're here in the Pacific Northwest right now.
Yes.
Your Castables Types is a book that you've written.
Yes, it's a book that I've written. It's about my approach to acting. It was something that I developed really over my career as an actor, as a director, working with writers, working with a producer, being on the casting side of things when I wasn't on the acting side of things, and then eventually coaching. And it really came out of the fact that I would be sitting at castings at auditions, and I would just see one actor after the other come in with resumes filled with all kinds of classes and degrees and all the hard work and all the money and all the, emotional capital that they had put into their career, and get up in front of me and just be boring. Nothing would happen. And it was bad for me as an actor, and I really started to look at what it is we teach actors, what it is we as actors learn in terms of taking our career to that, what I call performance level work, which is the type of work you have to do in order to get hired in projects today. So it really came down to a lot of years of being in that laboratory of acting on a lot of different sides of the table that I developed Your Castable Types and the Complete Thought Approach to Acting.
Now, your book, it's available on Amazon here in the U.S., and I imagine it's available all around the world.
Yeah, it's in bookstores too, surprise, surprise.
Surprise, surprise.
there are still bookstores.
Yes, there are still bookstores and there's still libraries,
I was really thrilled to write a book and be able to get it out there, but made me so happy. I was going around to the different bookstores and taking pictures of myself next to the shelves, like, bookstore.
That's fascinating, because there's still a lot of, like, in our town, we have a really nice bookstore, and it's called Bloomsbury, and it's just really cool. I mean, it's like all kinds of nice books, downstairs, and upstairs they have a cafe that, a garden area where people can sit and read and talk, and they have authors come in and do book signings and, things like that. So
cherish that place. Cherish and value Bloomsbury. New York City used to be filled with those places, and unfortunately, real estate, most of them are gone now, and it's a shame because it's a great place to go, and it's hard to find a book now if you can't just walk those aisles and look on the shelf and talk to someone really knowledgeable about what should I be looking for.
Well, I think a lot of that has to do with, of course it has to do with the internet, but you can still order your book in, hard copy or paperback.
Yes, absolutely.
I always say available on Amazon, because so many people, when you're in an airport or when you're traveling or something like that, as opposed to, carrying the book with you,
mm-hmm.
You can, if you download it, you can, you can have 2,000 books,
Yeah, absolutely. Just finished doing some traveling myself, and my back is paying for everything that I carry on to the airplane.
For all our listeners out there, you were an actress, and you're still an actress.
Yes.
You're writing books, but then this is one of the things when I was doing research on you, is that I was like, I am, just kind of like, wow, that just blows me away that you have done extensive show touring, mm-hmm. and you've worked with bands like Pearl Jam and Scorpions and
yep.
Brooks and Dunn yep. and Beach Boys. Oh, man.
Yep. Mudhoney, King's X. Oh, yeah. And a lot of those gigs, I was the only female on the crew, doing of all the roadies that would come with the bands and the ones that were there with the house. It was me. And it was not easy to earn their respect. And in truth, I shouldn't have had to. I should have just had to show up and do the work like they did. But, you know, I ended up earning their respect. And it was something that I did because I love having all that varied experience. I don't know. It's great. I mean, when I was in school, you know, I was studying a lot of European avant-garde art and, you know, American drama and diving into the literature. And I came out and ended up, you know, working at MTV, American Gladiators, and, you know, Adam Sandler and Dennis Leary and Colin Quinn and all these people. It was like going from the ivory tower right into the best school. And it was a great ride.
You know, it's not like you're having the time of your life, you know, and...
It keeps going. I never wanted to be locked into one area.
You have, you know, classes too. And one of the big things in our town is we have a huge Shakespeare festival.
I know you do. You guys have a great Shakespeare festival.
Yeah, and, you know, and it really brings people in from all around the world. I'm looking here, you know, and you have one, the Filthy Dirty Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Embrace the entrance, the entree.
It's one of my most popular classes, and I usually can only do it about, like, you know, offer it like maybe once a year or once every 12 months or so. Maybe I'll have to come out to Oregon and do it.
You should.
Yeah.
You know, as a matter of fact, speaking of New York and Ashland, Oregon, mm-hmm. One of my next door neighbors. His name is Tasso Feldman, and he's an actor. Yes. And he came up from Los Angeles to perform in Shakespeare. He stayed for a couple of years with Shakespeare, doing two seasons there. Some producers were in Ashland, and they saw him on stage. Anyway, mm-hmm. To make a long story short, as they say in the show business and everywhere else, he is now currently residing in New York City, where he's in the new ABC series Black Box.
That's fantastic. Everybody in the industry knows about the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. They all know that there's quality work that's done there. And, you know, people respect it. They respect it when they see it on an actor's resume. And I know a lot of people who have had big career boosts from being out there and doing the production. And people who are able to, you know, have a video of their work when it's well shot and use it to market their talent to the industry get a lot of mileage out of it. So, you know, I often say to people who are coaching with me or who, you know, who want to coach with me, that kind of thing, and they go, yeah, but I don't want to know Shakespeare. I'm like, you don't know what you're missing. You don't know. This is the greatest material you can dive your talent right into. You know, why not do it? Have fun.
You even have a free webinar for people still waiting tables, you know?
Hey, we all know what broke is. But, I wanted to do a webinar that was based on the basic tenets of the book. So for people who, you know, even for going out and dropping, you know, $15 or $16 on Amazon to buy the book, you know, if that was just going to be a stretch. So that they could just get an actionable feel for what they can do to rev their career up and to get it going. A lot of actors, they coach shop and they class shop, they go around. You know, they hear somebody say like, oh, my friend just booked a commercial or just booked a play and he took that class and you need to go take that class. And that's not the way to do it. You know, it doesn't mean that class isn't good. But you need to begin with what you have to offer the industry that's unique, which I believe are your castable types. And then you need to really develop them thoroughly. You need to carry it into everything that you use to let the industry know your talents out there, which are your marketing materials, your headshot, your resume, your video, your voiceover demo. All those different things. And you need to really see how you can bring your castable type to your work. And that's why I developed an acting technique that you can either lay over what you've already learned at the base, or if you don't really have anything, if you feel like you've got this mixed up grab bag of stuff from a lot of different classes, you can use this to really solidify what it is you do. And in the process of doing it, there are ways to really bring what's unique about you, to bring your castable type to it.
Since you are, you know, in casting and things like that, you know, there's a question that's always been in the back of my mind. And I'm sure a lot of people think about the same thing, too. It's because I'll see an actor and I'll give you two examples, like George Clooney and Tom Cruise. And I've seen, you know, them in so many films that just sucked, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But then I've seen them in films where you're like, man, this guy can really act, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, why is that? You know, why don't they bring the same level to every performance?
It's funny because there's a lot of people out there that are, I guess, are considered by Hollywood A-list, and you couldn't pay me to go see them at the multiplex. Boring. When you do happen to be at the movie theater and you see that, you know, you see the coming attractions,
that go on for far too long. And my friend Peyton, because I'll be like, okay, here's the A plot line. Here's the secondary plot line. Here's where the character arcs. And they'll be like, shut up. You know, like, stop telling me the whole movie. But I'm almost always right. And it's predictable. And I think they're phoning it in. You know, it's sad, but it's what they do.
I see much more independent films and foreign films than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I do that is because, like, you know, the mainstream America seems to think every movie has to be, you know, just shoot them up, blow them up.
Yeah, overproduced. And it's like they never let up on the sound effects, on the overdecorated sets, like too much soft and dappled light or too many effects. It can be visually stunning and orally stunning, you know, oral AU, but it doesn't necessarily make for a better film watching experience. And if you can do it simply and the power is still there.
Well, you know what? I suggest all of our listeners out there go out and get your castable types by Cynthia White, and it's available in regular bookstores. You can pick it up probably in the libraries now, and it's on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble's, and everywhere that fine books are sold. Her website is www.independentactor.com, and you have, you know, just really made my day. It was such a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, you too. I had great fun. I'd love to speak to you anytime at all.
It sounds beautiful. You know what? And we will arrange that. And good. Thank you so much for being on today.
Thank you so much, Edward. You have a great night.
You too.
To learn more about Cynthia White, visit us on our website at justimagineitinc.com.
I wake up in wonder. You for nowhere bound train. Now that train is come and gone.
The Hard Way, a New York Times bestseller. In Lee Child's astonishing new thriller, ex-military cop Reacher sees more than most people would, and because of that, he's thrust into an explosive situation that's about to blow up in his face. For the only way to find the truth and save two innocent lives is to do it the way Jack Reacher does it best, the hard way. Jack Reacher was alone, the way he liked it, soaking up the hot, electric New York City night, watching a man cross the street to a parked Mercedes and drive it away. The car contained $1 million in ransom money. And Edward Lane, the man who paid it, will pay even more to get his family back. Lane runs a highly illegal soldiers-for-hire operation. He will use any amount of money and any tool to find his beautiful wife and child. And then he'll turn Jack Reacher loose with a vengeance, because Reacher is the best manhunter in the world. On the trail of a vicious kidnapper, Reacher is learning the chilling secrets of his employer's past, and of a horrific drama in the heart of a nasty little war. He's beginning to realize that Edward Lane is hiding something. Something dirty. Something big. But Reacher also knows this. He's already in way too deep to stop now.
The blue German sedan turned out to be a new BMW 7 Series with OSC vanity plates on it. Gregory unlocked it from 10 feet away with a key fob remote, and Reacher got in the front passenger seat sideways and found the switch and moved the seat back for legroom. Gregory pulled out a small silver cell phone and dialed the number. "Incoming with a witness," he said, clipped and British. Then he closed the phone and fired up the engine and moved out into the midnight traffic. The 10 minutes turned out to be 20. Gregory drove north on 6th Avenue, all the way through Midtown to 57th Street, and then two blocks west. He turned north on 8th, through Columbus Circle, onto Central Park West and into 72nd Street. He stopped outside the Dakota. "Nice digs," Reacher said. "Only the best for Mr. Lane," Gregory said, nothing in his voice. They got out together and stood on the sidewalk, and another compact man in a gray suit stepped out of the shadows and into the car and drove it away. Gregory led Reacher into the building and up in the elevator. The lobbies and the hallways were as dark and baronial as the exterior. "You ever seen Yoko?" Reacher asked. "No," Gregory said. They got out on 5, and Gregory led the way around a corner, and an apartment door opened for them. The lobby staff must have called ahead. The door that opened was heavy oak, the color of honey, and the warm light that spilled out into the corridor was the color of honey, too. The apartment was a tall, solid space. There was a small, square foyer open to a big, square living room. The living room had cool air and yellow walls and low table lights and comfortable chairs and sofas, all covered in printed fabric. It was full of 6 men. None of them was sitting down. They were all standing up, silent.
9 red-hot books ago, Lee Child concocted the rough, tough Superman of the crime-busting genre, as smart and charismatic as he is unbeatable. And then Mr. Child broke the mold. Reacher returns in this series' 10th installment, The Hard Way. It's one more labyrinthine story that takes off like a shot. As usual, Mr. Child has you at hello, says the New York Times. Lee Child is the author of more than a dozen Jack Reacher thrillers, including the New York Times bestsellers Persuader, The Enemy, One Shot, and The Hard Way, and the number one bestsellers 61 Hours, Gone Tomorrow, Bad Luck and Trouble, and Nothing to Lose. His debut, Killing Floor, won both the Anthony and the Barry Awards for Best First Mystery, and The Enemy won both the Barry and Nero Awards for Best Novel. All titles have been optioned for major motion pictures. A native of England and a former television director, Child lives in New York City where he is at work on his next thriller. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to downpour.com.
Get Behind Me Now, Stay There is a Just Imagine It, Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio, Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineitinc.com. I'm Chrissy McIntyre.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Jerry Renfro.
I'm Maya Seligman.
And I'm Charlie Stanton, and we like you, so be sure to like us on Facebook. And remember to get behind me.
Now stay there.
I don't know why nobody told you how to unfold.